Do you reckon you can sing, or do you only feel comfortable opening your mouth in harmony in the privacy of your own shower or car? Many people think they're tone deaf, and in fact, that's not true. Only a very small percentage of the population are scientifically defined as tone deaf, and that's a condition called congenital amusia. This week, RN Science has launched a project on air and online about tone deafness, what it is, who has it, and can it be cured? For some people, the cure, as I've discovered, is simply finding out they're not tone deaf at all. I was on a mission to uncover the truth. When 20th century American socialite Florence Foster Jenkins sang, people either reeled back in horror or thought they were part of an elaborate joke. And yet, because of her wealth and position, she was allowed to persevere. But singing like Florence Foster Jenkins is the stuff of nightmares for most of us, and it can take just one poor reaction to us opening our throats for a tune to convince us that we're tone deaf and that we have something missing from our musical DNA.
I was in the choir. I must have been about 8 or 9 or 10, and I always found myself being shoveled up to the end of the line, you know, right on the very end. Subsequently, I've realised that I think I was pushed up there because I can't sing in tune. I've then had this inferiority complex ever since.
That's Richard. He's 72, and I met him at one of the hundreds of community choirs around Australia that provide an oasis for people like him, non-singers, who've grown up believing they can't, and that perhaps hiding themselves inside a large group will give them the vocal shelter they need to be brave. Richard isn't brave yet, but he's sticking it out, and we'll come back to him later.
They're slowly gathering, so we've got some from our sopranos and altos and tenors and basses, but they mostly turn up on time at 5:30.
Kim Dillon leads 4 community choirs, and when I meet him, it's in the neo-Gothic Scots Church, where at 5:30 on a Tuesday afternoon, members of With One Voice Melbourne gather to rehearse.
Many people come to me saying, oh, I can't sing, and then they've joined a choir. I just love the sort of on the face of it contradiction of that. It's like, I can't sing and yet I'm joining a choir, but it's amazing that they want to learn to sing, and it's such a great way to do it with other people around, you know, working as a team. And many people, in fact everyone pretty much, who said, I can't hold a tune, I'm tone deaf, I don't believe them at the start, and then I quickly find evidence that it's not true, even though they've been told it is.
I've seen that a bit here, but I also have taken large groups for singing, for people who don't know that they're going to sing.
Sopranos, ready?
Narita Kurov teaches singing at a Steiner school, but she also leads the Chocolate Lilies. They're a community choir on the northeast outskirts of Melbourne, and they've been singing together for 24 years.
Singing 3 and 4 part harmony. I have people in tears after some sessions saying, I've never been able to sing, or been told I shouldn't sing, or I should mime. So it's been an incredibly empowering experience for a lot of people.
Do you feel that people who have come here thinking they can't sing and discovering they can have gone through some degree of feeling more empowered generally in their life?
I've had many comments about that, yeah. And I think it is that thing about your voice is, it's the most personal part of you, and once you open that up, it is incredible how it can then lead to people speaking up for themselves, having more of a feeling that they've got more of a say in their life. And I've had people speak about that many times.
One of the terrors that I probably still have is about singing flat. I think someone told me I was flat at some point.
Laurie came to sing with the Chocolate Lilies back in 2011. She hasn't left.
And I don't want to sing flat. And she talks a lot about where to place the voice and teaches you how to do it so you can feel a bit more confident that you aren't. And she's very good at not criticising.
Oh, that's fantastic. So you have to tell me now, where do you place the voice so you don't sing flat?
Kind of up inside the head.
In the sinuses?
In the sinuses,
there.
Yeah.
Ah, and that helps?
Yeah. Yes, it does, apparently, yeah.
So you thought you could sing, but you thought you might have had a problem with pitch.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, yes. So you've carried that with you at least
for a long time.
For a long time,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't call it tone deafness, but you would say maybe not able to carry the melody.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so I'll quickly remind you how the main tune goes.
Back at Scott's Church in central Melbourne, choir leader Kim Dillon is introducing the group to a classic from Johnny Mathis.
Back to me, three, four. I can think of a single person in each of my choirs in the bass section who's been told that they can't sing. It must be said often by their wives and other people.
And so being bass, then they're men?
Yes. Yeah. Right. Occasionally okay. You can have female basses, but predominantly they're men.
Okay.
And I think what seems to happen there is they feel most comfortable in a lower range of the voice. But many of the songs that you know people are singing on the radio and such are more in a higher range, say a tenor range, alto range, that kind of thing. And so when they try to match that tune, they find that it's not hitting any of the notes. And it's assumed they're tone deaf, both by them and by the people listening to them. But then when I actually test them out and I find, let's find what section of the choir you belong in, I play them a few notes down the lower octaves and I say, match this note, you know, and they'll get it. Immediately that dispels the myth that they're tone deaf, of course, because I've just sung a note to them and they've just sung it back to me. And I think what's happening is when you're actually in their range, you're in their world, right? They can hear the language, they can match it. Once you get above it, it's not so much in their range, it's not comfortable for them, and so they can't match it. So it's kind of like you need to embrace what their particular giftings are in order for them to realise that they can sing a few notes here and there. And then, you know, by weekly singing in a choir, that can actually, their range can expand, and they can start to reach in those higher levels.
The tone deaf.
Aaron knows what it's like to be criticised for his singing. What made you want to join the choir then, if people told you you can't sing?
I think it was my rec specialist, like who got me onto this choir. Yeah. She goes to me, she goes, "Oh, Aaron, there's this group, choir." And I said, "Oh, all right." And then I love it. It's like a drug. Yeah, it's addictive.
And since you've joined the choir, do you feel like you're singing better than you ever sung?
Oh, hell yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, the confidence, mate.
Yeah.
You know?
I generally have a low self-confidence, and it's still debatable whether I can sing or not, so I'm not sure.
Well, when you say it's debatable, is it you who debates that, or do other people around you debate that?
Well, other people tell me that I can hold a tune, but I think not.
So you think they're wrong?
Yes. I think they're just being nice.
And when you do sing, do you forget these doubts of yours?
Maybe when I'm in the moment for a little while, yeah, yeah.
Is there any particular song that makes you feel like that?
I like the Africa song by Toto, and I like Here Comes the Sun, and I'm also learning new songs, like from the Beatles, and I think there's one up there by Billy Joel, artists that I've never really listened to, but I'm finding I can actually sing along and feel good about it.
It must be wonderful to watch that realisation break out on their face.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of my favourite parts of this job, is just seeing the growth in people who join because they have a great spirit and willingness to give it a try.
And they feel safety in numbers, which is why people overcome their initial concerns that they've been told all their lives that they can't hold a note.
That's absolutely right. I mean, you're working as a team here, so even though we may do, you know, four-part harmonies, each of those parts has one team working on them. And so if you're quite new to this, you're surrounded by people, some who feel very confident, some who kind of the middle, some who might be just like you and don't think they have any hope in the world. And you're also in an environment where it's okay to make mistakes. I mean, you know, you wouldn't get very far in music if you weren't able to make mistakes along the way, and you know, that's the way these things work. So I think it is a nice safe space where you can try those things out and actually grow in that way. Yeah.
In the course of your time as choir leader for four choirs, have you seen over that time of years people who've come to you who've said they've been told they can't hold a tune and have gone on to do solo work?
Absolutely, yes. I can think of my Geelong choir, for instance, a man who joined us, was told he was tone deaf. Same thing, he was a bass and can go okay down there, but not so much higher. But he's improved so much. And I think 2 years ago, we gave him a solo. He sung the Minnie the Moocher solo from the Blues Brothers. He nailed it pretty much. He had his own sort of flair on it and everything, but hitting those notes really well.
Hey, folks, here's a story about Minnie the Moocher. She was a low-down hoochie-coochie.
I know that you're hoping someone who's new to the choir will be coming along tonight.
That's right. A good friend of mine in the bass section who I think fits this bill. And I have great belief and faith in this man, but he still needs to find it in himself, I think. And he's been coming since just around the end of last year. So he's still relatively new to the choir, still building his confidence, but
Yes, I want to keep encouraging him, and he's right in this box where it's like I can hear his potential and that he has these particular giftings, but he needs to find that strength within himself at the moment.
And that choir member filled with self-doubt is none other than Richard, the bloke you met at the front of the story, who had been put to the back of the choir as a kid and been told not to sing as an adult. Richard enters the hall just after 5:30, and as the choir rehearses, I can see clearly now, I take Richard out the side door. How did you even get the guts up to come to a choir?
Well, you don't need too many guts here, but was at some function at 5 o'clock one night and I heard this singing, and so I went round the corner and I saw this choir or this bunch of people singing, and there was a bloke up the back who wasn't singing, and I spoke to him. I said, what's it all about? And he told me about this Sing for Good, and he gave me his card and said, why don't you come along? And I said, well, I won't yet, but I might one day. Well, I kept his card, and a couple of years later, like last October or whenever, I rang him up and I said, look, I might come along, what do I do? And he said, come along to Scots Church. And I find Kim is very encouraging, that's the leader.
He believes in you, you know.
Well, his belief might be misplaced, but at all events, the main thing is it doesn't really matter. That's the thing that I get out of this, and I like to sit next to someone who's got a good, strong voice.
And Richard, what's your goal from this? What do you hope to draw from this?
That's a very good question, because I said to my wife this morning, I said, look, I'm not sure about this singing and the choir. I don't really feel as if I'm... She said, oh, you go. So, okay, I'll go.
So do you think you're not tone deaf?
I have no bloody idea. Pardon my French, but I've got no bloody idea whether I'm tone deaf or not. I'm completely deaf in one ear, have been since birth, there's zero hearing, so...
That doesn't make you tone deaf?
No, I don't know whether I'm tone deaf. I don't know. I've never really stood alongside a professional one-on-one for half an hour to make a proper assessment.
Well, I'm telling you that the choir master, Kim, thinks you have potential.
Well, he's a great encourager.
Well, come on, time to get back inside. I've kept you long enough. You go and learn those words.
Thanks, Michael.
And a big thank you to the two community choirs who took part in my quest to dispel the perception of tone deafness. And Richard, all power to your voice. I hope you get there in the end. Gavin heard our coverage of this and agrees there's no such thing unless the person actually has a hearing issue. He writes, I have taught voice for more than 20 years and rewired many a supposedly tone deaf voice. Tony writes on Facebook, when he was a teenager, my son would often not get out of bed. I use singing as a weapon. Singing the Wiggles, lights, camera, action in top voice, similar to the Patrick Swayze character in the 1990 film Ghost. As an early childhood relief teacher, I would often have 5-, 6-, 7-year-olds spellbound when I would sing in my baritone singing voice, Happy Birthday, Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and Advance Australia Fair. Tony, don't rush around to my house. In the meantime, this is the best of life matters.
This Is About is a podcast hosted by Jordan Raskopoulos. That's me. Stories told by those who live them.
To do a good job, you kind of have to believe that you're Spider-Man.
He was holding what he claimed was Ned Kelly's skull.
She just said to me, if you can't have this baby, I'll have a baby for you.
What I thought was two different dolphins was just one shark.
What?
This Is About on the ABC Radio app or wherever you get your favourite podcasts.
Listen now.
On your phone.
You know, just do the thumb thing.